This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. On Sunday, November 5th, a man walked into a church in Sutherland Springs, Texas, shot and killed 26 people and injured 20 more. The man alleged to have committed the crime, Devin Patrick Kelly, had a conviction in military court on his record for assaulting his wife and stepson. But that information was never reported by the Air Force to the national database that would have prevented him from legally purchasing a gun. Subsequent reporting has shown that the military has not been consistent in reporting domestic violence convictions. Joining us for the rest of the program today is the Adjutant General of the Vermont Guard, Stephen Cray. Major General Cray, thank you very much for coming in today.
No, good afternoon, Jane. Thank you for having me.
So after questions arose about how this alleged shooter actually got his hands legally on weapons, especially considering his conviction for assault, NPR's Tom Bowman was the first to break the story that the Air Force had never sent his name to the FBI to be included in these databases. Reporting has also now shown that this wasn't a one-time mistake. It looks like there have been many cases where perhaps people's names and their convictions in military court were not shared and not then put on the FBI database. So it's a little unclear whether, you know, there's a loophole that that's being exploited, whether it's unintentional or somehow intentional. But I'm wondering if you have any insight into this.
Well, first of all, just a tragedy in Texas. There is a distinction, though, between when we say the Air Force, and that certainly has to play with the fact that this is an active duty situation in Title 10 of the statute and in a completely different system than the National Guard works in.
Right.
Right. So
good. And I want to get into that, too, because the National Guard is different. So
correct.
I definitely want to talk about that.
Correct. So in that situation, the Air Force has a process and an ability to prosecute and to do all of that, that process and to even incarcerate within their own system.
Which they did in that case.
In which they did. So in the National Guard, though, we don't have that same process. All of the actions that happen would happen with civilian law enforcement. So any of the cases that would develop that would involve a National Guard member would be referred to the local law enforcement before anything would happen within internal to the National Guard.
Presuming not that somebody's not on active duty on deployment, for instance, in Afghanistan.
Yeah, correct. So I'm just talking about here in Vermont, because you're right. If our members are deployed overseas and they get involved in an incident, it would be handled through the either the active Army or the active Air Force process, and then handled that way. But when they're stationed here at home every day. Whether they're full-time, you know, work, that's their full-time job here in the National Guard, or they're part-time and they have another job in the civilian, if there's an incident, it's handled by the local law enforcement. And so, therefore, any of the results of that is disclosed through our law enforcement agencies, and they have that responsibility.
So that's how it works in the Guard and in the Vermont Guard. But for you, as an active duty member of the Air Force and of the military, do you have any insight into why this is a problem in the military? And you know, again, not saying that this is an issue in the Vermont Guard because it's handled differently, but that it would appear that in the U.S. military, and in particular in the Air Force, there at the very least is not consistent communication between the FBI database and the military, the military courts.
Yeah, I really don't have any insight as far as exactly why that would or would not occur. It's the relationships that we have here in Vermont with our local law enforcement would allow us to have those conversations, to share that information. And we've done that consciously, probably one, because we're a small state, a small organization, and we have a lot of members in our organization that are part-time with the law, you know, local law enforcement as well, or that's their full-time job, part-time with the National Guard. So, and we're obviously very comfortable with that exchange process. But as far as why it works sometimes on the active duty and not, I don't have any insight. And unfortunately, it appears that this played into this tragedy, and that needs to be corrected for sure.
Well, a group of senators has just introduced legislation that they hope would help to correct that. It's called the Military Domestic Violence Reporting Enhancement Act. And what I understand that this bill would do would be to actually change the language so that one of the things that happens in the military court is that people are often convicted of the technical term that they're convicted of is assault, not domestic violence. And so that may be a point of confusion about whether somebody's conviction has to be sent on to the database. And so this bill would label that specific type of conviction domestic violence or domestic assault. I'm not sure what the language is. And it would make it very clear that this is domestic violence and needs to be added. Do you support that kind of language change?
So I'm very familiar with that folks, members from the military that are discharged have a characterization of their discharge and a coding, if you will, of why they were discharged. And so that in itself, I think, is probably what we're talking about, is actually opening up and actually adding more options to the characterization of that discharge. And I think that's transparency on what, you know, the member's service and why they have been discharged. And in some cases, I think it's up to the member to disclose why they were discharged from the military, and then sometimes it's the employer or others that have to discover that kind of disposition. But I think as much as we can be transparent to why members are leaving the military, I think we should be. And I assume that's what we're getting at here.
So going back to the way domestic violence situations work in the Vermont Guard, as you said, it goes through the civilian system of justice, the civilian courts. So if someone is charged with and then convicted of domestic assault, domestic violence, how does that get to the Guard, and what action does the Guard take?
So when the National Guard is notified that they have a member that is involved in a case like this, they are, whether it's Air Force or Army, they're what we call flagged in the system. So the personnel department puts a flag. It suspends their security clearance. It does not allow any favorable actions on that member while this process takes place. Once it finishes in the civilian system, then the National Guard, and through the chain of command, then determines, okay, so what, each case is different, but how does that affect that member's ability to serve in the National Guard? If there's a conviction, in most cases that has to affect their security clearance, which would not allow them to serve in the National Guard. So then there's an administrative process that happens, and in some cases, ultimately a discharge. Again, getting back to that characterization of the discharge, which would be the Vermont National Guard's responsibility to report in that case.
Although, presumably, if someone's gone through the civilian justice system, that's already going into the FBI database.
Correct.
Through the regular civilian system.
Right. But they wouldn't characterize the discharge from the military. So that would be our responsibility. So that's what we would do administratively.
And there are different types of discharges that we've been learning about as well, in particular through this tragic situation in Texas. But a bad conduct discharge is not necessarily something that would bar someone from getting their hands on a firearm, but other kinds of discharges might. So that would be then the determination of the Guard how to discharge someone.
Yeah, there's an overall discharge, you know, whether honorable or under general and under honorable conditions, and the seriousness of the discharge kind of determines that level. But then there is also some coding and some wording put into the discharge that would help clarify exactly why this member is being discharged from the military. So, and if there is legislation to help refine that some more, then maybe that will add to that clarity. But that would be our responsibility to do the administrative piece of it.
In preparing to talk with you today, I've been looking up questions about domestic violence and the military and trying to get a handle on, you know, is there a sense that there's more or fewer cases of domestic violence in the military? And it's really difficult to get a sense. And, you know, obviously reporting differs depending on what you're checking. But often what I came across was that there's a concern that there may be an underreporting of domestic violence situations. Is that something that concerns you?
It does. You know, you and I have talked on this show before about sexual assault cases and harassment cases, and they are probably being underreported. All of these deplorable actions are contrary to our core values, you know, of treating everyone with dignity and respect. It goes against, you know, good order and discipline for the Vermont National Guard. Doesn't have any place in our organization. But I realize that we are a cross-section of society, you know, and I've said that before. I've said that our organization isn't perfect either, and I understand that you know, we have cases and we need to deal with them, and we need to deal with them in the correct way that allows the victims and survivors of these types of actions to be able to get the help that they need and rebuild their lives, and that we need to take action and held people accountable. And we do. And we can, because we're in, you know, we have a system, an organization that can hold people accountable. And I think we need to be examples for society to build on and to improve.
Do you have a number of domestic violence accusations and convictions for guard members, active guard members, over the last few years?
I don't have a specific number. And I'm actually not even – I've asked the folks, you know, can you give me specific examples of cases? And I haven't been able to, in the last few years, actually get on my hands on an exact number or specific cases. But again, I think I realize that we – you know, this could be going on. And the thing is that our members, because we're in the National Guard and we live in the civilian communities – you know, there may be instances that we just don't know about because it hasn't gotten back to the command yet, too. You know, so and then, of course, the underreporting that you talked about.
Are female service members in the Guard coming forward with their Me Too stories? We've been hearing this from so many women in so many sectors of the American population who say sexual assault, harassment, various different types of prejudice against women is really pervasive. And I imagine, as you said, this being a cross-section and a particularly traditionally masculine one, that's an issue. We know it's an issue in the military, but I'm curious if female service members have been coming forward.
They have. I actually, myself and the Sergeant Major, we issued a letter a couple weeks ago to talk about, you know, what was going on in the media today, the stories of women coming forward, and I just wanted to reemphasize that we do have a culture where we value this dignity and respect, and that you have a safe place to come. We have a good system in place. We have good people who are good advocates for folks who want to come forward and tell their story and get the services that they, because we've built a very, very strong network across Vermont with all of the different organizations that are out there to help men and women in these situations, including domestic violence. And that's what it's about. It's that connections to be able to get them to the right people to give them. We're not necessarily saying that the Vermont National Guard has all the counselors and the services, but we know who does. And that's the most important thing, is to get them to those right people.
Shifting gears a little bit, I know that the Vermont Guard mobilized after storms hit Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands in September. What did Guard members do?
Almost immediately, we were asked by the Virgin Islands to send doctors and nurses to the Virgin Islands. So we worked with the state of Vermont. We sent about the first group was about 40 doctors and nurses down to the Virgin Islands to work directly in the hospitals around the islands, both on St. Thomas and St. Croix. As they started, because they were without power, without water, they worked in the emergency rooms. They helped sort of the triage and the immediate care response. And they stayed there about 30 days. We also sent some communications personnel down to help with that. And then following the medical folks, we sent two of our Blackhawks and the crews down there to do search and rescue. And they did another 30 days there as well. So in total, I think we had around 70 to 75 folks on the ground for weeks, helping the folks in the Virgin Islands get back on their feet. I actually went down and visited them for one day, just down and back that same day. Across the board, our soldiers and airmen were just incredibly proud of what they were doing as part of a unique job that they do in the guard, you know, to be able to help out in that capacity. Very, very important work to get them going.
You know, you and I have talked as well in the past about how members of the military try to stay out of politics, but you, as the head of the Vermont Guard, certainly advocate for the members of the Vermont Guard and things that you think lawmakers could be doing to make sure that Guard members are taken care of. So you do have some legislative priorities.
Absolutely. Our biggest and our number one priority this year, and it was last year as well, is to secure tuition assistance for members who join the military. Number one benefit that members are looking for to join the military's education benefits.
Number one, that's what they tell you.
Yep. Out of all of New England, Vermont is the only state that does not offer full tuition to our state schools. There is legislation that we've drafted to even that playing field. We are connecting the dots between graduating high school seniors who have a propensity to serve, who want to go to college but may not have the means to do so, get them that education. For every year that they get tuition assistance to go to our state schools, they owe 2 years of service. So they're giving back to the state of Vermont, more likely to get a job and stay in Vermont. And then I think that aligns perfectly with the governor's priorities and the state of Vermont's priorities to grow our workforce and to keep our young men and women here in the state of Vermont. I think this is an excellent way to do it for a small investment.
But you said it was your priority last year, so obviously it didn't happen last year. Do you think it will happen this year?
I'm very positive. I'm hopeful. I think that we're reaching out to the right lawmakers. Obviously, it is an investment in Vermont. We're asking appropriations to make that investment, but we think it's a very wise and smart investment to make.
Is that hurting your recruitment here in Vermont?
It is, and we're struggling to recruit to the numbers that we need to serve in today's military. And we think this is probably one of the smartest things and the best things to help us get there.
What's the price tag?
Right now, we're asking it's around $800,000to provide that kind of tuition assistance. But I think when you look about developing our workforce, keeping them here in Vermont, and what they could get back to the state of Vermont, I think it's an investment that we need to make in today's Vermont National Guard.
Stephen Cray is the Adjutant General of the Vermont Guard. He's a Major General. Thank you very much for talking with us today. Really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.